Welcome to episode 11 of the Ikivi podcast. In this episode, we have with us creative director and writer Mandavi Menon, who is passionate about using innovative storytelling to spark meaningful change. She believes that expressing creativity freely with integrity is at the heart of building a more inclusive world. We talk about entrepreneurship, her experience and learnings from it, and her work across multidisciplinary fields. As a creative, impact-driven entrepreneur, we delve into knowing her process, how she balances and organizes her work, and how she selects the projects she is involved in. Communities and community building, both online and offline, are a large part of what she does, and we discuss how this has played a role in her work. Thank you so much, Mandavi, for joining us and taking the time to have this conversation. I'm excited to learn about your journey and for everybody else to kind of listen in to what your life has been like in terms of work as well as personally. So to start things off, I'd like to start with how your entrepreneurial journey began and how you came to be an entrepreneur.
Okay, so firstly, thank you for having me. I'm super happy to be here. And about entrepreneurship, I didn't call it that till much more recently, like maybe 9 or 10 years into my journey. What I really always did, I think right from the beginning, was seek out opportunities to do the kind of work that I wasn't getting from a more traditional space. So I started out, doing the writing for Midday and Times of India. And I had a full-time job actually with Times Internet. And on the side of that, I would sort of moonlight as a culture and arts journalist. There were maybe, you know, very few and far between platforms at the time. There was Wild City and Border Movement. So yeah, I ended up moonlighting as, culture and arts and all the things that I really was very interested in. And I used to write about music and the independent scene and subcultures essentially. And from there, I also ended up doing film scripts. And what I was finding is that there really weren't enough opportunities to do this kind of storytelling. And there wasn't representation for the creative subcultures and communities that, we had access to in our immediate physical world. But without there being a sort of consolidation of all of it, people didn't know about each other, couldn't exchange. And that's sort of where the seed came up between me and my former partner. We used to have all these informal, excited phone calls from our full-time jobs, like, we can totally do this. And yeah, it came from that kind of idealism. We were very, very young, all of 24, which is probably why we were foolish and brave enough to start it. And that was the beginning of what I suppose we'd call entrepreneurship. It was, like, for me, that word is really about just making the space for something that didn't exist before, for kind of creating a world that you want to see more of. Mm-hmm. And often I think people look at it in terms of like scale, and there are all these big jargony words, which I have never really sort of related to. And that has been my personal kind of interpretation of that word.
I think that's such a beautiful thing to say, that, you know, you kind of don't know what you're getting yourself to. And there's something nice, so nice about starting it off when you're young. You don't really know too much as well. So you just kind of dive head on into it and kind of see what it has for you.
Yeah.
So what does it mean currently in today's day mean for you? What does entrepreneurship mean to you now? And what are you up to these days? Because I know that, you know, you're doing several things. So tell us about that.
Okay, thank you for the opportunity to make this more coherent. I am doing a lot of things, and I have found the best umbrella to kind of put all of it under is creative direction on the commercial side of things. Like, what I do to make a living is in media and advertising. I work with brands. I work with institutions as well. It could be to design an entire campaign, or it could be to develop new brands' identities who haven't launched themselves yet. That's something I've been doing a lot of in the last year. And then I have kind of, in the last 2 years, created a separation between what I do commercially, and then there's my creative personal work, which involves, I'm a writer at the heart of everything. So that, of course, is a skill set that comes into my commercial work as well. But on this side, I write children's books and poetry and short stories, and hopefully I will get around to publishing very soon. But yeah, that was where I started, and it is where I will end up. And yeah, multimedia storytelling, I think we can put it all under that one term.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. But can you tell us a little bit more about how you divide your time between these two aspects of it? Because this is something we discussed slightly earlier on our previous call as well, that there are a lot of people that are looking to do exciting things and things that really fulfill them, but at the same time have that difficulty of what and in what capacity to do each of these kinds of work. How does that look for you?
So it's very much a work in progress. It's something, like I said, I only started doing in the last 2 years, because previously when I was running Homegrown, I was doing everything under one space. And what I found in, like, since leaving is that I really wanted to be able to put a different kind of energy into my personal work. And when you're trying to make income out of something and make a living out of that thing, it complicates it. And I really wanted to liberate that side of what I was doing from everything else. But I think the line is sort of, you have to figure out a way to enjoy everything that you're doing. And I think you also have to spend the time establishing yourself to a certain extent so that you can kind of, you've developed enough of a skill set and enough practice to be able to do what you do and manage your time efficiently and actually have the discipline to then devote what little time you have left to the other things that you want to do. So I recommend it, but I think that you don't, you know, there's plenty of time, and I would really, really want to reiterate that for, like, younger generations, because the culture right now is quite crazy. And yeah, I think that it's possible to take the time to first really develop your skill set so that you're able to make that separation in the first place. And then you kind of put on different hats at different times as required.
Yeah. We'll get to that a little bit more in detail. But
sure.
Can you tell us a little bit about the recent work that you did with UNICEF?
Sure. That was a really special campaign, actually. It's called the Minor Project. And it was essentially, so I'll give you the formal version, is it's a public dialogue initiative to help end violence against children. And it was for UNICEF India and also a really wonderful NGO called Leher, who work in child protection. And the aim over here was to get young Indians, you know, between that sweet age group that everyone wants to speak to of 18 to 35, 40, and really getting them to kind of engage in dialogue around issues related to child sexual abuse, corporal punishment, domestic violence, very challenging things that to have such conversations on digital media are a challenge. Mm-hmm. And we were lucky to kind of be working with these two institutions who, for a change, were not sort of looking for, we want 100 million views, we want this many people to see it. They cared about the actual qualitative conversation that was happening, which gave us a lot of room to kind of think about how do we genuinely get people to share in a way that's authentic and in a way that can lead to further conversation, in a way that even when we are out of the picture, those conversations are seeded in their minds and they can kind of continue them offline. Because that's something that I question myself on a lot, since we work so much in digital media. What is the actual impact off of it? And it matters more and more to me as I'm going further down this road. So in that sense, it was a very, it was a really amazing campaign that we learned a lot from. And we did it through a variety of ways. There was a lot of community kind of integration and bringing in people with very unique and different voices in what they did personally, but how we kind of planted these different conversations in a way that was actually authentic to the things that they speak about anyway. And then also creating completely new pieces of content that were exciting. I have some of them back here, actually.
No.
And, Yeah, so that's really what the campaign was about. It went on for about, I think, I would say 4 months. And that was phase one. And now we will be getting into phase two in another few months, where the what we're trying to do shifts a little bit. I think in the first round, it was very much about building awareness and really introducing people to these topics. And now I kind of want to shift it from people sharing about their own childhood, which was a large part of our first campaign, to actually observing what's happening around us. So yeah, that's a slight inside shift, but the formats and the tools and the mediums that we're exploring will remain the same.
I'm curious to know how you would kind of ensure that the conversation you that people are having online also happens offline. Like, that's such an interesting way to put it, because I feel like, yes, we are having so much conversation online, and it is restricted to just this online space. How do you ensure that? Or how do you see it through?
I think that that happens through actually engaging with your audience. You have to go further than just seeing the comments or viewing your, like, the messages that come to you. We got a lot of emails and a lot of private messages as well. And we actually went into further questioning with as many of our community as we could. We were a very small team, but it's just about taking that extra step and interest. And a lot of people were naturally sharing stories. So the first thing that you do is the way that your content is designed is in itself drawing attention to that. Like, here's how you actually can, you know, have this challenging conversation in your community. Or really, that's where the awareness comes in. I think once you encourage people to even think about that in the first place, very often they then have the tools to go out there and do it. And you have to do it in a way that's accessible. Like, you can't tell someone to go and, you know, petition the government or the panchayat in their community or something just like that. But you can give them the tools. We had a very, very lovely series that we did as part of this called What Would Murli Do? And Murli is one of our campaign mascots that we developed, an elephant who's super sweet. I love her.
I did see that on your Instagram. Yeah. Oh, you sent it to me. Yeah.
Yeah. So we did. So Murli is supposed to be the stand-in for the adults. And then we have Minor, a character who's representing all young children. And Murli then becomes a person who we can all project ourselves onto and see, like, okay, this is how she handled this very challenging situation where perhaps you think a child is being abused at home. What do? You can't go and just knock on your neighbor's door. It's not that simple. So giving a series of steps of how you can kind of tackle that problem in gentler ways and then slowly amplifying that if you need to, who you can reach out to, who's really there. We don't have that kind of information, and we're not often taught stuff like this, though we should be, because the issue is really, really widespread. And it was tough to work on even emotionally, the entire campaign, for that reason.
Yeah, but I think you've so beautifully brought it together, because it was very it really struck a chord, but at the same time it was cute. So it was like cute to watch. So I think that that combination really reaches a lot more people and has a lot more impact. So that was beautiful.
I love the way you describe that. And that's actually the sweet spot of what I like to do, is if there's a chance to be whimsical and still tackle challenging things, but in a way that doesn't alienate everyone and we sort of draw more people into a conversation. That's the dream, and the Minor project really allowed us to do that.
So like you said earlier, you definitely wear different hats and you do really different things as well, both for personally as well as professionally. How what is your creative process like? Because it could vary or could not. I mean, you can tell us about that.
It's a really good question. I think the one thing that it all has in common is there's a lot of discipline and ritual in it. Just naturally, because I have, my brain is the equivalent of 1,000 tabs open on your computer a lot of the time. And to kind of hone all of that in, I like to structure my day as well as I can. So it's, you know, waking up at a certain time and dedicating a certain amount of time to writing every day, to the commercial work you have deadlines on. So it's much easier to structure because somebody else is kind of creating that mm-hmm. thing for you. Though often in my case, that doesn't happen and I have to create that. But yeah, I think those are two really important parts of the process. And I think all creative people have these two sides to it where sometimes you feel like you're just channeling something and it comes from somewhere and you're like, I have no idea how that happened and where it happened from. And but the truth is, you can develop enough of a habit and an ability to access that if you do it often enough. And especially for writing, I would say that's true. I'm not sure if it's exactly the same, but yeah.
Something I hear, you know, creative people often talk about is just give it time and kind of sit with it. Do you have that as part of your process as well?
Hugely. I don't do it consciously. It's only when you ask the question that I realize it was a yes. But you have to be, that it's also helpful to be doing different things because then you can be like, okay, right now, this is not really coming naturally. So I can move on to this other thing that I was working on. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I would say that I'm lucky, but nowadays everyone is like multi-hyphenating.
Yeah.
Has to kind of wear a million hats anyway. So it does sort of help to switch to another thing and then come back to something. And also if something is just not coming, leave it. It depends on what it is. But yes, giving it time is always, it's always recommended in life and in creative work.
And I think scheduling as well has such an important role to play. Like you said, it's, I mean, you can really achieve or do a lot more if everything is scheduled. And this is something that I have personally learned from our creative director, Riya Gupte, as well.
Oh, I love her work. And we know each other, actually.
She has drilled it into the way we function as a company. And I think that has allowed us to achieve so much more.
Absolutely.
Or actually not necessarily achieve, but really just do what we want to do.
Yeah.
You know, which is really cool.
And I think the creative directors are not given the credit for that often enough. But so much of it, that's where the discipline comes in. Like, it won't happen unless you create a structure around it. It can be anything. It can be different person to person. But it's so, so relevant to making sure that you actually are able to create that output. Otherwise, things can remain in, you know, an abstract ideation form for so long. So we often have to push that agenda to make that happen.
Yeah, I actually didn't think either that it was the job role of the creative director, but it somehow does end up in the hands of the creative director because they are steering everything in some direction. So yeah,
often.
That makes sense. Yeah. So in my own experience and as a value in itself, I feel that a critical skill to entrepreneurship is patience. Giving things time, enduring through experiences, and allowing things to really formulate and take shape and also kind of fall apart and allow it for it to happen over a period of time. But in today's world, businesses are so fast-paced. The expectations on people also to kind of catch up to that pace is there. And it can also sometimes feel really unrealistic and overwhelming. Do you ever feel hurried? And what kind of relationship have you come to have with patients over the years with your work?
So I would say the word persistence comes up for me much more than patience. Patience is not an adjective I would use to describe myself. just naturally. But I do think keeping at something, which kind of amounts to patients in some sense, is really important. Like, it should, we have to get to a point, and if you are going to take this path of kind of doing things on your own in some way, then you do need to drown out the outside to a certain extent, I know it's super important for input, and that's how you expand your thinking. And it's always striking that balance, right? But I will still say that you need to be in tune enough with yourself to listen to your instinct, to slow things down, even if everyone on the outside is saying hurry up, which is so the case in media especially. And a large part of the reason why I made a big shift in the way that I get involved with media building now, it's very, very different to how I used to do it when I was in my early 20s. So, but I do think there's so much merit in continuously doing what you set out to do day after day, regardless of the external circumstances, and it always pays off. You may not know how.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you meant by being you being involved differently in your early 20s and it, towards, you know,
yeah.
The later?
I think there was so much learning and very fast-paced learning that was happening. It was all new. It was blank canvas. Nothing like what we were doing even existed. So it's not like there was some laid out path that you could go on and follow. And then at some point, and I think anyone who's been in media knows this, it became such a numbers game. And it was super challenging to not toe that line. You know, mm-hmm. you know that the lists do well, or the you know, a certain type of piece does 100 times better than a piece that is really reflecting the values of you know, what you set out to do in the first place. So that rat race of like you have to do 50 pieces of content a day and all of that, I just felt that the quality of work was more important. And this is completely person to person, you know, it's just the kind of life that I want to build and the kind of world that I want to see. So I totally respect people who are like, I don't know, I want to be a multi-billionaire and I don't have 100 million audience or something like that. I get the value of it for some people, but if I can live a good life and impact people, a smaller group of people positively, and really introduce them to the kind of storytelling that I hope to, that's enough, you know, like it's just down to what's enough for whom. And getting out of it was I consider it a liberation and a blessing in huge ways, though it was a very challenging time. And I reoriented myself a lot, again, not consciously in the beginning, but now just seeing the joy that I get from doing the work that I'm doing at a different pace is unparalleled, and I wouldn't give that up lightly. I would try as much as possible to make choices that take me further down this road if I can.
Was there one particular situation or instance, or is it a series of things that led you to kind of know exactly what kind of life you want to lead? Because it's 100% intentional, right? And yeah. And that sometimes is hard to figure out for yourself, at least when you're younger. Yeah. You just don't know where you want to go and you kind of get pushed around.
Yeah, absolutely true. It's a $1 million question and I've never spoken publicly about it before, but I do think it was one very big instance and I don't want to get into the details of it, but the reason I left the company that I started was there was a lot of turmoil and values differences and just generally, it was an external circumstance that kind of forced me to consider these things. Though now in retrospect, I know that those questions were sort of percolating in the back of my mind for a long time. I just was so on the treadmill of what I was doing. And, you know, you truly love something that you built. Like, I'm sure you relate to that. It's, it's a very, very emotional decision. And I didn't give myself the time to really, really think about that. And there were so many other agendas and interests and, you know, like it's no longer just about, you know, what you set out to do in the beginning. So that definitely was, and I'm grateful that it happened now. As bad as it was, I really am. And I hope to anyone who hears this, because that kind of point comes in everyone's life, you know, at some stage. And you have to kind of ride it out and, you know, go through the motions of that and take that time to reflect and, you know, give yourself the solitude and not, which honestly, I wish I had done more reflection because I was throwing, we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely, I would like to think that I would have done it anyway, but it did take something fairly monumental in my life, at least, to make me really look at that the way that it should have been and address mm-hmm. it in a way that really aligned with my principles and my values.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about values, your work, also the kind of projects that you choose to do are definitely very value and impact driven. What kind of relevance, in your view, does value-driven work have today for businesses? And how can that translate into business practices, actual working of a company?
Yeah. I really want to try and answer this question practically. I think right now, more than ever, we also need to answer this because every business, it's sort of almost become trend-based to align yourself with something. And it's important and it's answering the market to some extent because that is what younger generations are sort of expecting and asking for, which I think is great because it's forcing people to ask that question. I think right in the beginning when you're starting something, this is one of the most important conversations to have. And there is merit, especially if you were as young as we were when we started, to kind of put yourself in hypothetical situations where, because values only matter when, you know, your back is against the wall and you're in a moment where you have to exercise them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we can say we believe in things, but until we practice them, what are they? And this is not to put anyone on a path towards perfection, but it's something that we can sort of look at and be like, okay, this is the shape of the world that I want to build. And these are the kind of principles that I hope to see more of. So how can I act that way more? And you slowly kind of keep building and you keep evolving them as you go. So I think it's super, super important for any business and any brand to answer what their values are. And it's really even more important to be authentic and not insanely unrealistic about it, right? For mm-hmm. example, I may naturally be inclined towards a certain set of values that interest me. Like it could be compassion, or it could be slower living, or, you know, Ikigai has many of their own as well, right? I think you need to kind of narrow that down almost, like really sharpen them and be like, okay, these are things that I really want to commit to. And the other things become secondary and tertiary, but you don't have to put everything under that umbrella. And then you have to integrate that into your act. So if you're running a platform, for example, or a small company, a big company, whatever, you really do need to kind of work on how that reflects internally within your organization and then think externally as well. And not everything needs to be communicated to the outside world is another thing that I would say.
Yeah,
it's more important that internally this is a compass for you, and this is what you turn to navigate yourself through times of, you know, complexity and things like that. So it's not necessary that you have to go out being like, this is what I stand for. But internally in the company, the people who work with you and the people you collaborate with, that's what they should walk away feeling, you know, mm-hmm. In the experience of having worked with you. So I would start there and then go towards what you end up expressing based on your learnings to your audience if you have one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's so challenging also. Ikigai definitely is a value-driven company. Right. But sometimes I feel like it's so challenging because you're faced with these decisions at every point, right? Like you have to either choose, I mean, most often you have to choose between two different things.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to compromise on your value, or sometimes you don't.
Right.
And as a business, especially to survive, you do need to kind of make money at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, for example, I personally don't believe that we should spend money in Facebook advertising. Just because
I want to interview you about this.
I feel all kinds of things about it, but it's so important for us in as an e-commerce business to be doing that, to be putting in money into online advertising, right?
Yeah.
So those kind of things tend to become really challenging as a business. But I like that point where you said that you start kind of internally and then integrate a lot more to it.
Yeah, I would add to that that you're right. There's constant compromises being made. But what really helps is when you're honest about that first with yourself and then with the immediate people that you're working with, being like, okay, this is more transparency will lead to more kind of ideas happening and different kind of solutions will emerge, you know, to these problems that we're having right now, because we are in a completely unprecedented age. It's not possible to do everything right, like I said.
Yeah.
But hopefully when you are faced with that, if you can at least tell the truth about it, being like, okay, this is the reason why I'm doing this. And I hope in the future to be able to take small steps towards changing that as we come up with different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So at least you know you're on the path towards trying to figure out that problem.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. So my next question to you is about homegrown and that it was definitely a large part of the work that you've done in the last decade or so.
Absolutely.
And a platform you grew from its inception. What was your intention with starting it?
I think definitely to build a voice that represented young Indians in a way that we didn't feel was happening authentically. That was the driving force in every way. And to that end, this editorial was built and, you know, it was storytelling that could speak to identity and subcultures and creative communities and all kinds of expression. And it was very, very beautiful, I think.
I agree. It was really beautiful.
And and then the natural extension of that was, you know, offline and how we generate, you know, sort of revenue was more through the events and the creative agency. And the reason we were really able to do that, I feel, and like, you know, to challenge how brands and institutions were traditionally used to working, right? We were really kind of taking on that model, being like, it doesn't have to be that way. Mm-hmm. And here is how young people are genuinely being engaged now. And I think in some senses, we were some of the first people to do that. There were, of course, others. But because we had built this strong voice and like this audience, and we had proved that people really do want to engage in this kind of space, that we were also able to do things differently on the other side. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think it was very much about creating a community and a space for all of these things.
Yeah.
Also the things that people were not talking about, like taboo was a word that came up a lot. I never looked at it like that then. But we were happy to have the conversations that nobody else was willing to have at those times, especially regarding sex and sexuality. So,
and it definitely was the first, I think, that was out there that definitely reached me, at least.
Yeah, it's likely. And to be honest, I've not seen too many independent media platforms come out. And I can understand the reasons why, but I hope to see much more of it. And in the last year or two, I've been quite excited to see more people kind of putting their foot in that arena.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
including Ikivi.
Definitely. I think it has increased and there are a lot more people vocally talking about it. And I think that's one thing we can give social media the applause for is that it
right.
is the ability to kind of talk freely.
Absolutely.
So your work reflects your appreciation of communities and community building clearly. Whether online or offline, what does a community mean for you? And what has your experience with building, growing and nurturing communities been like, especially as an entrepreneur? because it can, as an entrepreneur, it also kind of tends to be very individualistic in a sense.
Yeah. It's what you know to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a great question. It's very large. I'll try to answer it.
Try it and in whatever way.
So what does community mean to me? I would say there are two ways to look at it. One is often, I think through the lens more of conformity, which I don't subscribe to as much, where, you know, you're coming together because of you're like-minded or all in a similar wavelength. Or that's an access point and it's an entry point, I think, into the idea of community. But what I really love about it and what for me is a healthy, vibrant community is one in which you don't necessarily have to agree on everything, but there's a lot of love and there's a lot of exchange and there's a lot of learning from one another. Mm-hmm. And expanding your own ideas of the world through interaction and conversation, not just conversation, also physical sort of, like, you know, you can also call going to music concerts and stuff like that a community that develops around this activity. But yeah, I think that's what is exciting about it. And it's also the most fertile way to encourage collaboration and harmonies where you would not expect them otherwise. You know, I love that social media has done that, that you see so much more mixed media art forms and unusual collaborations happening, which I think has changed the way that we do things. And mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I think, work-wise, very much what community is about.
Yeah, so with the kind of work that you do in terms of, you know, the creative projects, creative direction that you do, are brands or platforms looking to consciously build a community through this work? And do you actively play a role creatively to do that as well? And Absolutely. If so, how?
In fact, very often that's why brands come to me directly. So it's a big ask. And it's usually the ones who want to build a smaller community, not necessarily in the hundreds of thousands in scale, but people who really want that kind of engagement and dialogue, similar to a UNICEF Leher TMP situation. So they... Sorry, question again?
No, I mean, like, how does creativity play a role in building a community?
Okay, so that just happens to have been my experience because that's what I do. I'm sure there are other ways to do it, but that the creative community was my community. We shared a wavelength. We were all expressing ourselves through our own sort of mediums and our art forms. So there is a big role in how you get somebody to be involved or interested in something they may not have considered otherwise as well. That's been my experience through the projects that I've done. Now, how do we get, you know, an illustrator who's been working on different kinds of things to genuinely engage with something like the Minor Project? We can give them an opportunity to tell a story from their own childhood using their medium, you know, like mm-hmm. it's coming up with these little micro sort of solutions that make it authentic for the person to get involved. Like we did this super lovely series. I'll give you an example of Monsters Under My Bed for the Minor Project, where we asked artists to kind of think back to their own childhood and think of it could have been an abstract monster that they were afraid of or something that was genuinely a cause of a lot of fear for them growing up. Mm-hmm. And to visualize that. And we got these really, really amazing, beautifully thought out pieces of art and even graphic series, etc. from that. So I think that kind of answers your question. It's just one example, but creativity plays a big role in community building, both from how you're building the community in the first place and also from how you make them collaborate with one another once they're in.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so my last question to you is about social media and your role with social media. You have consciously chosen to not really participate too much, at least from what we've seen online.
No one is going to be able to hear me laugh through all your questions.
But it's such an interesting choice. Is it something that you chose consciously?
It's not a forever choice. It's a constantly evolving relationship that I think pretty much anyone on these platforms is grappling with now.
Tell us about it. Because I mean, 100% there are a lot of people dealing with it, but I'd love to hear your personal experience with it.
So I mean, I credit it for the ability to have done everything that I have done up to date. You know, I'm in a lucky position where I managed to establish myself enough that work now comes to me without necessarily having to put myself out on social media a lot. However, every time, so this is the contradiction, every time I actually do share work, especially like, you know, Appalam Chappalam or Minor Project or these things that are really close to my heart, I often get more work like that, right? So it's always this kind of either or. But the important thing, like the question that I sit with a lot when it comes to social media is, that's where you go for the ultimate reward. It's like a rewards platform, you know? And then we ignore, there's like 90%, it's like the dark web, you know? 90% of it is happening not over here. And that's such an important part of the process. And it's really, really important to me that I'm always enjoying that, that I'm not always looking at it through the lens of what it will be when it's finally put out, because that hampers the work is what I have found personally. For many other people, it's different. And in fact, I often do, you know, I do workshops with young people in colleges and stuff, especially about, you know, building communities online. And it is, you have to kind of create a healthy relationship with it, where mm-hmm. I think it's very possible to take the pressure out of it and really look at it as a wonderful place to practice, to create discipline. Like if you did for yourself what we do for our companies and really, you know, encourage ourselves. And I see a lot of creatives using it beautifully to that extent. But I don't want it to become a rat race.
Yeah.
So that's just my personal feeling. But I totally see the value of it when it comes to work. And every time I build a platform, that's how it kind of makes it out into the world in the first place. So yeah.
Do you think at this time that we live in, it's possible for creatives to not, or anybody to not necessarily have a presence online?
Very, very difficult, if I'm honest. And I want to actually encourage young people to make it work for them rather than they working for it. So like I said, I hope that we can rethink our relationship with it so that we don't tie up too much of our self-worth and those kinds of feelings. I feel, you know, we might have escaped it by like the tiniest amount. But when I think about really young people who are kind of entering this space and, you know, it's filters and a lot of masking of what reality is, I want as much as possible to not leave social media, but to be able to bring this perspective to social media. And like, I don't know if we'll be able to change it by jumping out of the system and becoming a hermit. So I'm not propagating that for sure. But definitely enjoy your solitude and put things out when you're ready. That's it. Yeah. Like, take the time. Don't feel pressured to be like, oh, if I'm not putting something out every week, that means I'm not working. That's not the case at all. And anybody knows that when they're sitting by themselves. So that's all.
Yeah. And I think also the other part of it is like really focusing your attention on how not to feel anything by the amount of likes or shares or whatever that you get. Because say for example, you use it just like as a portfolio, right? Like you use Instagram as a portfolio, but you do put out content and for some reason, based on the algorithm, of course, that particular piece of content doesn't do well. It really kind of brings you down.
Absolutely. And often you can put so much effort into a certain type of thing that naturally doesn't do well with this algorithm.
Exactly.
And it can be heartbreaking, especially for a creative person. And I really, really feel for artists and creators in this space. But that's a huge part of the, I wouldn't even call it resistance. I would hesitate to value anybody's work like that. Mm. And I think the more this conversation comes up and the more we hear about this and the more people start taking different steps towards, figuring this out in their own little space, we'll be able to make it work for us again, I hope.
Yeah, for sure. So what are you working on currently that's exciting, or what is something that we can look out for? And also, where can the ones who are listening in follow you, follow your work?
This is a trick question. You knew my
we are waiting for your website.
So just for everyone listening, Nivi 100% knew that I have not created my website yet.
So funny.
But okay, so Real Talk Instagram. where I'm not putting out my work so often. I only put out the projects that like are super close to me. There's obviously a lot of commercial work that I do that I don't necessarily put on this platform. That's just the bare-faced truth.
Yeah.
But there's a link tree over there where you'll be able to see a lot of different things. There are two platforms that you can check out. One is Appalam Chappalam, which has been on a break for a long time, and we're looking to raise funding for it. Mm-hmm. And we should have totally talked about that, but we forgot. And that's a children's storytelling kind of initiative, which...
tell us about it anyway.
So that is a lockdown project that began very early on into the very first lockdown that we went through last year. And it was created to bring, you know, a measure of pleasure, as we call it, and, you know, lightheartedness and wonder and imagination into underprivileged urban children's lives at a time when that was not a priority at all. And it really is. We felt that. So what we tried to do and ended up managing to do was get a lot of people. And this is still date the most wonderful community we've ever been able to build. Of, you know, grandmothers and teachers and students and people telling stories that they loved in their own childhood in video format. And then these were distributed out, you know, through frontline workers. And it was really quite special. And it grew into something much, much bigger because in the end, it's really turned into a repository of regional literature, which I love. And it's so many stories that we would lose otherwise. So it's sort of serving as that archive. Also introducing you to so many different cultures, stories. We don't realize it, but each sort of state and community has these gems that the rest of us have never had access to. So it kind of created this this translation also that was happening. And and it's also, we look at it as keeping the art of oral storytelling alive. And that's what Appalam Chappalam is in kind of a nutshell. There's a lot more to it. And we hope to carry it forward next year as well. Yeah.
Nice. Lovely. So I think what we'll do is we'll also link these few projects that you're working on that's also on, that has an online presence. So people can go and take a look at it and check it out. But thank you so much, Mandavi, for joining us. This has been such a lovely conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And it was super nice talking to you too.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the EKV podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The EKV podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at EKV.